All right. Boom.
Where do you think you're going? Nobody's leaving. Nobody's walking out on this fun old-fashioned family Christmas. No, no!
Kicking
off our final fashion family Christmas by heading out into the country. It's Christmas, we're all in this together. We're gonna press on, we're gonna have the happiest Christmas. Take a look. All right, let's go, 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 go. It's Corn Killers, episode -717. Welcome to Corn Killers, the show that thinks you should be able to watch the stuff you love when you want, where you want, on whatever damn device you please, and we're going to help you kill all the cords that get in your way. They don't have a chance. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, I'm Brian Brushwood, and that was an awesome mashup. Yeah, I actually loved that up until they started auto-tuning, and the moment I heard the auto-tune, I was like, oh, it's an auto-tune, you know?
Yeah, I was okay with the auto-tune. What do you think, guest star Justin Robert Young in the center square?
I thought it was all right. And I'm very glad that on this episode, we are killing the most important cord, the umbilical cord, because this baby is live. We are live here on Cord Killers, and I'm very happy to be a part of this episode.
Yeah, well, I think people missed it earlier, but Justin Robert Young had the big ceremonial scissors out and sliced right through that. That didn't. Cord that he's talking about.
I spanked Brian's bare bottom. He started yelling.
Greg Louganis did a difficult triple gainer, and then and then a monkey pressed a button, and this thing started. For those of you guys who don't know, this is our brand new show. This is our first and only beta episode. We plan to be delivering regular content right after this. We are funded
first of maybe two
by you,
but but that's it. After that,
no.
Definitely.
We're going straight. We're going straight to the moneymaker, man. For those of you guys who signed up at patreon.com, that's patreon.com/cordkillers. Thank you. I asked Tom last night whether or not he expected anything like this. And it was one of those rare, delightful times that Tom very freely cursed in front of me. And so thank you. We were all very, very surprised, but we're not going to run.
Y'all
these first
made me curse. Okay.
We're not going to.
And then you made him say y'all.
We're not going to make you guys pay for any of these. We're going to release these free just on they are. And then we'll start charging you guys later on. But now where are we going to begin?
Well, yeah, just if someone's like, wait, I get charged? Do you have my account number? No, for those who want to back us on Patreon, you can pledge a certain amount. And so many of you have. It's just been fracking amazing. So thank you again for that. But no, if you don't have a buck to kick our way, it's totally cool. You will still get this episode absolutely free. And this one's going to be free for everybody. We're not even going to count it on the Patreon is what Brian's saying.
That's
so
what I'm saying.
Without further ado, the big story.
Oh, also, we only have stand-ins for all of the bumpers. So here's the first one. And by the way, Justin, they are able to hear it at home, but we can't hear it because science and reasons and wire.
Well, yeah. So as you can see, Brian has done his best graphical design work to date on our bumpers today. But if you think you can top him, we're open to that.
Yeah.
So cordkillers@gmail.com is the email address by all means. And we're happy to see if you can beat Sharpie on a cardboard.
Awesome. All right, man. What's the big story?
Yeah, well, our first big story, 4K Netflix streaming launching next month, Brian. Next month.
Okay, now this is how much of this do you think has to do with the fact that, I guess, number one, it's Christmas season, so this is the time that people, if you're going to get a 4K TV, it's probably going to be this month, and you're going to have the same question that everybody has, which is, well, now what? What the hell do I do with this?
And right. You can get a few YouTube videos. You might be able to download a few things here and there, but mostly you're going to be scrambling around. Netflix is going to announce the 4K streaming partners at CES. They're actually not even going to launch the service at that point because not every TV will work with it.
Yeah, okay. Well, because it's the equipment, too. Keep in mind, like, the PS4 and the Xbox One, out of the box, don't have 4K support. They're promising, like, down the road, maybe you get around to or something like that. So there's a substantial lag. This really is a throwback to those early days of HD, where everybody was recording in HD and then releasing in 4/3 regular standard definition, just knowing that, you know, 5 or 10 years from now, we'll wish we had this HD, so we're doing that.
And that's what I think is so interesting about this, right? Is that Netflix is saying, look, it's chicken and the egg problem, right? But we're going to lead the way. People are going to want that content, and we've shot House of Cards in 4K. House of Cards will be the show that leads the way into 4K on Netflix.
But hold on. If this is HD, then everybody and the partners would be happy that at that rollout, as quizzical as it might have been to people who were following it as early adopters, was massively successful and redefined what television was. They don't want it to be 3D, which yes. was obviously just a complete cluster screw. And a lot of these people that went and bought 3D televisions still have, you know, just a complete lack of material to watch. And the stuff that is there isn't exactly great and doesn't show off the format to the best of its abilities. Of course, whether or not 3D can be showed off to the best of its abilities on the television side has kind of remained to be seen. But for 4K, I think everybody's getting their chess pieces in a row, because when they make their push, they want the reaction to be, oh my God, did you see Tom's new TV? It's amazing. We got to get one. And not, what do you mean? There's no other, you know, glasses, and there's only two movies out in 3D.
Right. Well, and the other thing with HD was you had to work with the MSOs. You had to work with the cable providers, the satellite providers, to get them to offer your channel in 4K. So if you're shooting and you want to make the decision to shoot in 4K, you're putting out a lot of expense on the off chance that it might not even get broadcast in 4K. What Netflix is doing here is taking their advantage and saying, we can put it out in 4K anywhere we want. And so House of Cards, we own you. You're shooting season 2 in 4K, and we guarantee it's going to be put out in 4K.
How do you think it's going to work? I guess the two bottlenecks that popped into my mind immediately is I guess three. One is you got the lack of displays. There's not a lot of displays out there, but that'll change. I think people are getting excited about buying 4K TVs, even if it's just to play high-end PC gaming or something else besides watch TV on. Number two, you've got the bandwidth, which is probably the biggest one. I wonder whether the service will involve, like, are you going to end up like pre-buffering for 30 minutes in order to get half the movie downloaded before it starts playing? And then third is the devices that play through. I'm guessing that like Rokus are underpowered to the current generation of, you know, the cheaper low-end products. Your Chromecast is not going to be able to deliver this. So it's going to be a matter of which devices are compatible.
Well, and that's a big part of the CES announcement is it's going to be TVs. They're going to say these following televisions, 4K televisions, will have a Netflix app on them that will be capable of 4K. Not every 4K TV you buy will be able to play Netflix 4K, and not every Netflix app you have will be capable of 4K. So you got to keep an eye on that announcement. Otherwise, I guess they're just hoping, well, if they're rich enough to buy a 4K TV right now, they're rich enough to pay for the bandwidth.
Right.
Well, do you guys think that this will be a leading element of what we will see in the next generation of smart televisions? Like we've heard forever about Apple doing a television. Would that be a part of it? The combined one device 4K display kind of television?
That's an interesting thought, right? Because this starts to give smart TVs a better name, whereas right now they have a crap name. Everyone just assumes that they're pretty much unusable. Unless you're a late adopter. If you're somebody who just buys a TV and it has the smart TV, I know plenty of people like, well, I use the app because it's there on my remote. And I don't understand Rokus and Apple TVs.
You know, I think this is a really smart move. And I mean, it makes sense for Netflix because it doesn't take much except for them to adjust their infrastructure and plan for something that likely is going to happen anyway. By being first, they get themselves a good name. I wonder how much cajoling it took from the TV industry for, you know, behind the scenes for them to say, like, look, we really need content out there for all these 4K TVs. If anyone's going to buy them, what can we do that would help get you providing it for them sooner rather than later?
Yeah, I think it might have taken lots of cajoling. But I think that's where I go back to saying that's where Netflix had the advantage, right? Is they were able to say, like, it will happen. And it will happen on televisions, and it'll happen with our show. And so the manufacturers leapt at that, I'm sure. So I imagine they've got a lot of really big names, Samsung, LG, those kind of names on board for this.
And not to mention the fact that just the inclusion of Netflix has to make the adoption of a new format like 4K way easier than the adoption from standard definition to HD was, because it's just in a tremendously advantageous place in a business and cultural sense where people are like, oh yeah, no, it's Netflix. I watch the shows that everybody talks about on Netflix. It's a part of my daily entertainment life.
Yeah.
Let us move to another big story,
Get
Brian.
Ready. Here it comes. Here it comes.
Yes. Yes, it is. Another big story. This one isn't quite as big at first glance, but I know so many people out there that got really excited about this news. A YouTube channel, not a sideload channel, an official YouTube channel, debuting on the Roku 3, not the Roku 2, not all the Rokus, Roku 3, and only in the US, Canada, UK, and the Republic of Ireland. But YouTube on a Roku.
Yeah. Now, how big a deal is this? Is this something that you guys, I don't have a Roku, but my in-laws do, and I don't know that they would use it to watch YouTube videos to begin with, but is this something that you, that is like just frustrated you or defied logic? You're like, why on earth can I not?
No, for this reason, the biggest strength of YouTube is its library, right? That you can think of anything and find it. The biggest A downside of Roku and really any kind of set-top box has always been search. And to have it connect to your phone is kind of a workaround and an imperfect solution in and of itself. So that, unfortunately, what you would think would be a natural marriage, this gigantic video library, your television where you watch a lot of video, has always kind of died on the vine because their natural strength and the natural weakness have unfortunately been at the same point. Now we are in a position where that gap is getting closer. However, and it's good that it's there, but I don't know if everyone's going to be doing a backflip like they were a background dancer in Newsies because the YouTube app is on Roku 3.
On the other hand, I totally have that same impulse. I saw a lot of people maybe not doing handstand dances, but they were very excited to finally get the real YouTube app. And I think that's a testament to the number of shows that are on the platform on YouTube that people are starting to follow and they want to watch on their television. And this makes it easy. It also has the send to TV integration with the YouTube app. So kind of like the Chromecast works, you can now pick a YouTube video on your phone and then send it to the Roku. So the other thing is just like, hey, have you seen this trailer? Boom, I'm going to send it to my Roku and watch it up there.
What was the holdup? Why did it take this long? Was there a stated reason or was it just understood that they wanted to build their own Chrome-based platform?
I don't know, and it's worth mentioning my wife works at YouTube, but I still don't know. I would guess it had to do with monetization, that it had to do with the ability to adequately deliver some sort of advertising in that app on the Roku, because that is what usually people have mentioned is the holdup in getting YouTube on any platform.
So is
not to mention probably business priorities, right? I mean, there's just, they have so many people to work on so many things, and a native Roku player probably wasn't on the top of their list of things that they need to do for the viability of the YouTube brand.
So what does this mean as far as other devices? Does this mean we're about to see similar things on Apple TV or what?
Well, Apple TV has YouTube, but I would be curious if we get a better YouTube, right? I mean, the Apple TV YouTube app goes back to when Google and Apple were still friends before Steve Jobs declared he wanted to burn down Mountain View. So I don't know how long that app even lasts. I could almost see it going the other way where Apple just yanks YouTube off the Apple TV.
Oh, that's interesting.
I mean, because now we're past that, the deepest chasm of that ravine, right? Like, Apple and Google seem to be, edging ever closer to realizing that a huge information services company and a great hardware and software manufacturer kind of belong as friends.
Right. And I don't think Tim Cook has the fire in his belly to go after them. But that said, one of them is going to blink at some point and say, well, we need to upgrade this app. And then there's going to be a conversation, and they're not going to want to give either one of them to the other one. Google is pretty famous for being very strict about what they'll allow in the apps that they put on these boxes.
Yeah.
All right. Time to take a break and thank GoHomeSanta.com for existing. Go buy it. Even if you watch this after Christmas.
Well, and it, I think, of course, for those of you guys who don't know, Justin Robert Young is the author of Go Home, Santa. What's the elevator pitch you give for folks? I mean, you know, this is very relevant now for the next 48 hours. So here's the
deal. 9 short stories that I wrote. They all feature Santa Claus in one way or another. They are not necessarily connected. They are all independent short stories. They are all very, very weird. If you like the idea of Santa as an alien or as a black guy who is in a huge meme video that has now been left to the wayside of humanity, then that's the kind of stuff you're going to find in this. And I will say this, it was written very specifically for this time of year. If you are currently watching this at your family's house and you're very bored, there is a chapter in there called the Santa Nickname Tournament, written specifically for like today, tomorrow, and the day after when you are spending a bunch of time with family and you have no idea what to do. You can recommend playing the Santa Nickname Tournament. And I'd be very curious to see if anybody does it this holiday season.
That's awesome. You should also mention that if you want to see one of the tracks, because you have it released both as an audiobook and as a physical copy, you can listen to a puppetized version of one of the tracks if you search for Untitled Santa Prequel and Go Home Santa on YouTube, put together by the fabulous Jackie Hearn.
Excellent job, awesome. Jackie Hearn. Expect puppets in our future, too, I hear. Let's show you what they'll replace in the slipstream.
So wait, is there sound to these?
Yeah, you know, it's a Wirecast thing. It just feeds it
Justin,
out.
Justin, we went over this in the hour-long pre-show meeting that we had. You don't remember?
Sorry. Yeah. My bad, dog.
No. We got some Hulu news in the slipstream. New Hulu CEO Mike Hopkins was able to parade around some 2013 numbers. It's the end of the year. $1 billion in revenue, 5 million paying customers for Hulu Plus, compared to 695 million and 3 million customers in 2012. Not a bad year for a site that was rumored to be up for sale a lot over the course of the year, pretty much was up for sale, and had its CEO replaced midway through the year.
And keep in mind also that, 5 million subscribers is not anything to sneeze at, but these are all paying subscribers. Who knows how many multiple times more you have for people who come in and watch ads and do it just the free service. And I'm sure they make okay money off of that. But of course, it's the subscription that gives them that reliable revenue to make, smart long-term decisions.
They're also touting their originals here. They say they got 20 original series and double that number coming up next year. A lot of people forget Hulu has original series because they're usually shorter and lower budget than things like House of Cards or Orange is the New Black.
What were you going to say, Justin?
The growth that they showed did not match the growth they showed last year. And let's not forget that, as was brought up many, many times very fairly during their sale rumors, they have a business model built on a house of cards, meaning the metaphor, not the successful show. If they lose the rights to these shows, then a large portion of their traffic goes away overnight. And the business proposition that they have made for Hulu Plus subscribers is diminished exponentially with every partner that kind of pulls away from dealing with them if they want to go another way or they want to have their rights continue to escalate and they have to pay more and more and more, which is why Netflix has gone the way they have with their series. So it's interesting, but do you guys really think that any of these numbers change the fact that they're going to be shopping Hulu like a New York street vendor selling an iHeart NY t-shirt?
This is all just lipstick on the pig. You're saying they're like, look how pretty she is, huh? I don't even know if she is for sale. She's a pig.
I mean, why would I ever let a catch like that go?
You've been watching this story closer than anyone.
I don't know. Weirdly, it seems like nobody wants to buy it, so I might as well try to make it a success. But again, it suffers from the mushy middle. It's like Hulu isn't one thing or the other. It's this hybrid of a thing you pay for and then also put up with ads. And it's like I just think it would be, as a matter of fact, here, the top comment on this, if you pan down, it's the top comment is, if they actually stop playing ads for subscribers, the headline could have been Hulu Plus passes 30 million subscribers.
100% agree.
And that's what it boils down to. And I think,
because even though I've said I don't think there's a reason to buy Hulu Plus, there are some. If you're really into the exclusive material, like some of the Criterion Collection stuff that's in there, it's probably worth it. If you want the kids' stuff that's available and you want it to have it on the iPad, it's the only way you can get it easily anyway, I get that. But man, Hulu could be making so much more money if they would just say, guess what Hulu Plus is? It really is a premium subscription. Fewer ads or no ads. And everything that's available on Hulu on the desktop is available on the paid version. I get why they can't, because some of their licensees say, well, we'll only make it available on the web. So make a call. Make a gut call and drop that stuff. Tell them, look, then you're not on Hulu. We've got all of these viewers. You don't want to reach them? That's fine with us. I think we won't put you in.
I think they're closer to being able to do that than they've ever been. And in that regard, I am very excited that they at least have some kind of hard number like this to point to. And it's so funny because, like, remember, sitting on the outside, Hulu was created. It looked like a company that was built to fail so that they could say, ah, sorry, we tried. And the fact that we're now at this point, I would love it if they just were like, well, I guess this really is what people want and maybe we should provide them that.
I would actually go the other way. I think that they have walked too far down the path of making these kind of onerous deals with the rights holders because they were born of rights holders trying to get, you know, deals set in favorable positions for them, that it's going to be very, very hard to walk that back. It's hard to look in the eye people that were, you know, and still are, you know, in majority stakeholder controls in your companies and say that we're going to not, you know, we're going to redefine how these deals are done. And I almost feel like, will the successor to Hulu, spiritually or through, you know, the same leadership people, be a better version of this? I certainly hope so, because they've proven that this is something that people want. But I feel like Hulu is just, it's destined to get sold for parts and to somebody that can do something with it.
Well, maybe. That may be what it ends up happening. But don't forget that Mike Hopkins is a former Fox distribution exec. So my guess is Fox won the war. Remember, there was, we either sell it or we take the Fox tactic of using it to control distribution, or we take the ABC tactic and open it up. When they named Mike Hopkins, I think that was a signal Fox won that debate. So this is going to become an attempt to say, hey, would you like to watch a channel's shows? Buy Hulu Plus and you'll be authorized to watch these shows. And it will be, they'll make attempts to bundle it in with your cable subscription and stuff like that. I wouldn't be surprised.
Man, how long until you skip bothering to have? Because right now the proxy we have, and I'm sorry we're going long on this, but the proxy that we have is if you have a cable subscription, then all of a sudden it opens the gates and you authenticate and you're able to do all this stuff. But you have to bother to have cable has to bother to exist with a model nobody wants anymore. And Hulu has to bother to exist if it wants to do the same thing. How long until, like, you just have all these deals? And then it's just one, you just buy a season pass to all the movies. You just pay your dues, and then you just run wild in that ecosystem. I don't know.
I think that's the end game, right? But how long? I don't know, 10, 20, maybe even longer years. I mean, there's a lot of deals out there that have to be unwound, and a lot of people in positions of power that have to die or retire before they really allow all that stuff to get resolved.
That's a minor story to go along with this, by the way. When Hulu Plus runs wild on you.
That's right. If you remember the Video Privacy Protection Act that Netflix was fighting so that they could share your rentals on Facebook if you wanted, Hulu's getting sued, a class action lawsuit out of California, for that very same thing, for sharing details with Facebook and with ComScore, for that matter. So Hulu might have a tiny bit less money to strike deals with in the coming year.
Interesting.
Time for Tube Tops.
Yeah. See, look at it. Looks great. You know you love it.
Tube Tops, of course, the segment where we talk about set-top boxes. And a lot of folks out there are fans of Simple TV. I have an original Simple TV from the Kickstarter myself. They have released an Android app now so that you can control the Simple TV and watch the Simple TV recordings you have on your Android app. Of course, Simple TV allows you to record over-the-air broadcasts, and their big push when they first launched was you could watch them on Roku. Now you can watch them on Android as well, along with your desktop. And also on the Ouya. They've launched an app for the Ouya. So they're moving out into more devices, but I'm still not loving the way it works. And of course, I have original hardware and they have better hardware now, but I know we really want this. Does moving into more platforms like Android and Ouya, does that get you guys excited?
Well, it's tough because you have the two things. You have number one, you have the chess match of being on all the devices and in all the places so that you can raise the funds so you could bother to make it something that everyone's going to love. But then they also have the fact that it's like, we just want something that you're going to love. And I know you were disappointed, Tom, with the experience of yours.
Because I love the idea, right? I mean, the idea is all I need to do is plug this thing into an antenna and put it anywhere on my network. And then on any app connected device, Roku, now Ouya, now Android, my laptop, I can watch over-the-air broadcast as well as anything I've recorded off of over-the-air broadcast. It's a cord cutter's dream.
Yeah.
But
in theory,
isn't to me, this is great. It's a great footprint for them to expand where they are, right? In the same way that, listen, if we were to dial back the Wayback Machine with Peabody and Mr. Sherman and go back to see, you know, some of the little moves that Netflix made that kind of led to its success as of now, then yes, it is good to kind of get out to different platforms so you can experience their service. The biggest problem with Simple TV, as I understand it, is the service itself, specifically the screen, the image quality, the fact that it's getting this pristine over-the-air image and doesn't necessarily translate and is really restricted by your upstream bandwidth if you want to stream it somewhere else. So it's an evolving product, but I think these are good moves. They're just not key to the general success of this product specifically.
I'll say that the picture quality is not a concern for me anymore. I think they've really done a good job with that, even on my old original piece of hardware. The interface has gotten improvements, but it's still really slow to change between channels. They've improved it, but it's still not great. And they've got some work to do on the management aspect.
I'll tell you what, I've made this prediction before, and I mean it. The next device, the next set-top box that's going to win is when they announce some kind of technology that pre-buffers the next channel over. Because it's been 30 years since the best channel-changing experience I ever had as an old analog TV, as fast as you could hit the button, you could instantly see what you're looking at, and you instantly knew, crap, oh, good, oh, that commercial I wanted to see. And ever since we entered the digital age, ever since 2000, it's sucked to sit there like, oh, no, that's not what I want.
That's waiting for it.
That's not what I want. And it's like, if we can get to that fast stimulus response moment, then I think whoever does that is going to win.
Yeah, we were struggling with that on the Xbox the other day. We were trying to use the Xbox to control the DVR, which you can do.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the DVR listings, but you can do the fast forward and the rewind. And no, we went right back to the remote. We're like, that's no way to live.
Agreed.
Speaking of Xbox, though, they're in the film film.
Super smooth. Good.
Yes, so there's a documentary coming from one of the guys behind Sci-Fi's Alphas. Zach Penn is one of the creator of Sci-Fi's Alphas. He's doing a documentary about E.T., the extraterrestrial Atari games. Now, the legend is that they were such bad sellers that Atari went and dumped them into a landfill in New Mexico. So this documentary is going to hunt for those. They're going to tell the whole backstory about the making of the game and why it tanked and the legend about where they are. And then they're going to go into the landfill. They're going to excavate it, try to find evidence that these cartridges are in there. They've got one guy who says, yeah, I was 7 or 8 at the time. We all used to run out there and try to dig them up, and then they poured concrete over everything. The key, the reason we're talking about it here is not only just that it's a good geeky documentary that we're looking forward to, but it's going to be premiering on Xbox.
And in that regard, it's brilliant. It's a good move for Xbox. It gives them credibility. Xbox is playing a very long game here to stop being your internet gaming console and become your internet connected, your living room's port to the world of entertainment. And I think it's good that they're buying a little bit of credibility. I wonder how, I mean, these are talented people. They'll know how to tell a story. And I understand that when you write a headline, you write a headline of, hey, remember that urban legend? They're going to find out what it is. Unfortunately, it just reeks of Al Capone's vault, you know, where it's like,
yeah, I know what you mean.
You know, when you're selling an answer that you don't necessarily know you can sell.
Oh, come on. They know the answer. You don't sell a documentary unless you know the story.
That's a good
point.
To
us like, let's find out. But like,
do you think they already dug it up and they already took a peek and they're like, yeah, that'll read well, and then they left? Or how much do you think they know? They don't know if they're still.
It's like you know, right now, your friend Brian Teller of Penn and Teller fame, they just did a movie called Tim's Vermeer,
right?
About their friend who tried to figure out whether or not Vermeer used a camera, an early camera, to paint his pictures, and that's why he was able to get his very distinctive images. They knew the end of that story before they started shooting that movie, that documentary.
Right. Well, right. well, in fact, that's the example that popped into my mind is that movie. The reason it's getting all the buzz and everyone loves it is it's not just called the real trick behind Vermeer's painting, the movie.
Yes.
You know, it's called Tim's Vermeer because it's the story of a person who you come to love and appreciate his infatuation with this. And I keep in mind, I haven't seen it yet, but everyone seems to love it. And likewise, they're selling it as a story of a man's obsession to solve this mystery, right? And so in this case, you know, but again, they had a strong inclination, but they say that they've been shooting it for, what, like 10 years or something on that journey, and they didn't know when it started, they didn't know how it was going to end up.
True. But, I mean, I guess I feel like they're, and I don't know where they are in producing this particular documentary, right? But I would take a wild guess that before you get an announcement and a press release from Microsoft and they buy this property in whatever stage of production that it is in, that part of that pitch is, and then also we have this information that it's in exactly this place and we're going to dig and find it. And we have, you know, this information about where they are. It's not just like they didn't just walk into Microsoft's office in Seattle and say, remember that thing?
Let's go.
That's right, Justin. They walked into Microsoft's office in Santa Monica.
That's right.
Fair point.
But the documentary begins shooting next month, and they hope to have it available by the end of the year. So I kind of think you're right, Justin, and I kind of think Brian's right both. I mean, I think they have a really good idea that they're going to find them and where to find them, but I don't think they found them. I don't think they know. I think they still, you know, they still could dig it up that information was bad.
Well, or the information could be right, and they're like, this is some unforeseen rotting. It's like you have to get an archaeologist to tell what it was. Yeah, well, that's fair.
What if they find out it's an unheard of sequel to Pole Position instead?
Oh, man, now you're talking.
And by the way, listen, that story mentioned Zach Penn as like sci-fi's alphas. That dude wrote X2. He's been in and out with this, the modern trajectory of awesome superhero films. Zach Penn has been all over. He is a name that you should trust. He did the first story draft on Avengers before Joss Whedon was involved.
Wow. Right on.
He did the one that got thrown out. Is that what you're trying to say? No.
Joss Whedon did some Joss Whedon-y things.
He jostled it. Brian. Okay, so we're in reconstruction mode.
I'm ahead of you. I made a whole bumper. Decided to mix it up. No cardboard in this one. It's time for Scandlines right now on Court Killers. I'm throwing up the clock right now. I don't have a sound effect. What's our first story?
Because this is the one where we have a timer. And you've got a timer. All right.
I can reset it. Hold on. There we go. You're reset. Okay. Go for it.
Allcast is now in the Google Play Store for your Android enjoyment. The app shares photos and videos, not just from an Android smartphone to a Google TV, but to an Apple TV, to an Xbox 360, to an Xbox One, to a Roku, certain smart TVs, and any DLNA, most DLNA-compatible devices. The one thing it doesn't do is Chromecast. Hilarious.
So how is this going to, like, what is the short-term and the long-term effect on this? Because you have a better sense of the marketplace and what's in development.
Well, this is a nice thing for Android users, right? Because they're like, I don't really have AirPlay. We have DLNA, but it doesn't always work. Allcast is going to change that game because it's like, great. Now any of your Google Play stuff you buy, boom, you can cast it wherever you want. And those who use AirPlay and DLNA know that is so incredibly convenient.
Yeah.
It's the reason to have Apple TV.
And we're out of time on that one. So, Stevie. In fact, can we make that the official sound effect is when Justin goes, burr. Stevie is basically, is it an app or software or website or service? How do you describe this?
It's an app. Okay. It's an app. They have it coming to Android, I think, if I have this right. And it's available already on the web and on iOS.
But basically, it creates...
Oh, it finally arrived on Android today. But yeah, so it's actually pretty cool.
I set
it up with Twitter, and it just starts playing videos that people have tweeted.
That's amazing. And it makes it like a full television channel. It'll just keep on feeding you more and more of that stuff. My guess is that you could tweak the algorithm saying, like, I don't want videos of a certain length or more happening, I would assume. But this is a cool idea for if you want that kind of sit back, nonstop TV like experience. I think this is going to have potential.
In the movie where we replace Twitter with the business world, the Wall Street movie, Gordon Gekko showing this on a screen.
Hey, you know, one of the pieces of feedback we got when we were asking people about cord killers was, I want more international stories. So here you go. Singapore-based company owned by Japan's Rakuten called Viki is known as the Hulu of the rest of the world. They're partnering up with Baidu, which is Chinese big search engine. They're kind of the Google of China, to offer premium TV shows, movies, and content translated and subtitled by its users. This is stuff from like Turner and Cartoon Network.
Yeah, and this is brilliant because it's number one, like Vicky's got the right idea in that by making it possible to bring stuff that's not monetized at all in one country to another, and to overlay that with the very passionate fan sub community, I think this is going to be very, very smart. Justin?
I think it's great. And you can translate that, Vicky.
What does that translate into?
This is, man, I'm going to let Justin actually tell this story because I don't know nothing about sports. But there's a TV app that brings Sky Sports to Apple TV in the UK. And I assume this is another piece of the puzzle all coming together, right, Tom?
So, Tom, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, I thought you were going to let Justin tell it. But, yeah, I mean, this is the ability to get live sports for £10 a month on your Apple TV without having to have a cable subscription. Awesome.
It's going to be very similar to what the experience of ESPN3 is on the Apple TV in America right now, except that is something that you authenticate through your cable system. This you would be able to buy straight off your Apple TV. So yes, this is Sky Sports going in the direction that we assume companies like ESPN and Fox Sports will eventually, and it should be made mention, this is the same News Corp parent corporation that owns Sky Sports, that owns Fox Sports One. Fox Sports One wants to compete with ESPN. This could be a huge thing for them going forward to sell unbundled, buy it on your device, a subscription.
And Ripper Street may return. Some of you may have watched it on BBC America. Some of you may have watched it on BBC. BBC in the UK canceled it. But Love Film, which is owned by Amazon, is talking about doing a joint production wherein the BBC and Love Film would co-fund another season of Ripper Street. It would premiere on Love Film and then show broadcast on BBC One.
Now, we had seen this trend before, and certainly in America,
we see it in reverse, though, don't we? Usually?
Right. No. Friday Night Lights.
That's what I was saying.
Canceled by NBC, and then DirecTV stepped in. It premiered in its entirety on DirecTV's Channel 101, and then started going on
but never
NBC
an online
after
service.
The DVD was out.
Yeah. No, I it's good. It's good that it's happening, and I'm glad to see more international players in this space. Last story, Waki.tv hits 1 million users for its on-demand movie and TV streaming service, 125,000 from the UK alone. What does this mean, Tom?
This just means that there's more of this Japan-owned Rakuten company snapping stuff up. Waki has an interesting proposition. They offer both unlimited and digital titles, kind of like what Amazon does, right? Where you can get Amazon Prime, but you can also buy stuff at the same time. They're also rolling out on things like the Xbox 360, the iPad, and Android. So in the UK, in Spain, in Andorra, this is a big competitor in the space. Again, internationally, we're seeing tons of players jump in on this stuff.
Yep.
They also call soccer football, so what the hell do they know?
All right, I guess with that, we wrap it up and we're going to move on to what we're watching. Boom. See, I got tricky there for a bit.
It's tricky to rock around the clock. Yes, so what we're watching? Oh, we're going to do that. Yeah. I didn't really watch a lot. Been kind of busy the last week, but
I did
finally get back into Orange is the New Black.
How far along in that are you?
But this was episode 8 that I watched over the weekend.
So at this point, like, it's taken root. You know the characters. You get a sense of their storylines, oh, yeah, and you're speaking their language. Are
I
you
tell you what,
it?
The only thing I don't like about the episode I watched is the boyfriend, the fiancé storyline.
Oh, like, God, do I hate him.
Yeah. Get me back into the prison. Don't care.
I hate him like you are supposed to hate supervillains in comic book movies. Like, I don't like him. Wow. I distrust his intentions, and I don't enjoy anything about Jason Biggs.
And also, to give Hulu a nod, I know I rail on Hulu Plus, but I've been watching Father Ted and airplaying it to my Apple TV. And I know those of you who've been Father Ted fans for years are like, what took you so long? I don't know, but it's hilarious. And even Eileen was laughing at it. She was just watching it randomly because she happened to be in the room. It was some good episodes. So if you haven't ever seen Father Ted, definitely worth looking. It'll give you.
Yeah, I'm in the same boat as you, Tom. It's been a real busy time, so I haven't watched a lot. I did get sucked into like a 45-minute fascinating interview with Mike Rowe. It's available at reason.tv or reason.com, I think, on there. He's got this new set of scholarships, and he's focused on the lack of a focus on work ethic. He points out that that there are so many jobs that need to be done that everyone feels like they are above, that everyone thinks they all have to go to college, and that's a real problem. So he's created like a scholarship. He says, right now we only have scholarships that reward four things. It's either athletic talent, intelligence, musical skill or some specific skill, and of course need-based scholarships. There are no work ethic based scholarships, so that's what he wants to do is you know, not knock on college, but instead get people doing the jobs that you need. He points out that like a welder right now in a particular market can do $100 an hour and work as much as he wants for as long as he wants and can do very, very well in a specific trade. He's a really interesting guy.
Cool. That dude, Justin,
like, he, Mike Rowe, like, did stardom the hard way.
Yeah.
Like, he is the working class television star. That dude, between like Home Shopping Network and like local news, like, he has a very like real life Ron Burgundy path to fame.
Trained opera singer, like, no lie.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. No, he used to appear in bit parts in operas, making some scratch here and there.
And so, Justin, you've been watching what?
Let me tell you guys about this kid here, Bo Burnham. All right. If you haven't heard of him, he's a huge YouTube guy. He had a show on MTV called Something Is Gonna Be Famous that got canceled this year. He did a special that is right now free on YouTube or also on Netflix that is his stand-up. And I can only define it, and it is a hard thing to define. But if you enjoy Steve Martin's stand-up, if you enjoy Zach Galifianakis' stand-up, and you mash those into somebody with a very modern sensibility, you will very much enjoy Bo Burnham's stand-up. It's called What, and that's W-H-A-T, period. You can just search Bo Burnham, What, on YouTube, and it is extraordinarily funny. He's very, very talented. It's maybe... It was the first time since Zach Galifianakis that I watched a stand-up special, and I was like, wow, this is kind of like not like anything I'd seen before. Very, very good.
Right on. I'll make sure to check it out.
Now, Brian, where did you watch the Mike Rowe interview again?
Reason.com. I mean, it's on YouTube, but uh-huh. Reason.tv. Why?
Because I just noticed, and this was without planning, all of what we're watching was online.
Okay, I'm glad you say it, because I went when it came time for like what we're watching, I was like, I watched a ton of video content, but it was all in little 5-minute pieces. And so it's like, well, the only long form thing I watched was this interview. So I wonder if the rules have to kind of shift with the what we're watching, and we have to talk a little bit more about the piecemeal stuff that we've done.
It's harder to remember some of that stuff because you're just like, oh, that's kind of funny, and then it goes away. But yeah, I mean, and when I say online, I mean like, I'm not even just saying like, oh, I watched an episode of Arrow from the CW, but I watched it on my iPad. No, like Orange is the New Black, Netflix, Father Ted, Hulu, Mike Rowe, Reason.com, Bo Burnham, YouTube. Like this was all right from the net.
That's awesome, man.
Net citizens.
It's all happening. Right.
Are we doing the movie draft?
Yes. Let's check it on the movie draft. I have a fancy graphic. Here it is.
Berto's going to be mad.
See? Looks classy, doesn't it?
It does. I like the consistent color temperature across all of them.
I'm not saying it has to be that way for the next batch of bumpers, but sure. I'm rather proud that I pulled that off.
Oh, well, I guess the only reason we're really talking about it is so we can congratulate you, Justin.
Oh, my God. Just brutal. It's completely insane. Running away with it. Justin Robert Young, $483 million. Giving credit to his idea that one movie can just crush and shape everything. Now, here's the question. We have a natural experiment here, Justin.
Yeah.
You paid the most any movie has ever gone for in the history of the draft.
In the winter draft, yeah, right? Yes,
correct. Well, I believe full stop, because it's like 75 you paid?
74.
74. So what we could do is, after the fact, we can retroactively say, like, what if Justin had paid his full $100 and had only bought that movie?
Aha. Uh-huh.
Would he still have won? Because that's what we need to know.
No, he wouldn't.
Not yet. I mean, you have to wait for what is referred to in the industry as the Christmas multiple to really kind of see whether or not the Hunger Games is just going to stomp out everything else.
As soon as we're done with the Christmas holiday. 371 with the Hunger Games, Casey McKinnon and Father Robert both already have more than that, and they both have movies to come. So I think you're right, to have a scientific conclusion, we have to wait.
It's just that this is such a weird week/weekend
in
movies,
sure,
that you would think that something like The Hunger Games, which is a big family, I mean, like, something that you could take the family to, that everybody, many, many people have seen the first one, would do well over the holiday season. The question is exactly how well it does, and more specifically, whether or not it drowns out some of the other films that are yet to come out. But we will see. And really, I think the thought going forward is whether or not, especially in, and I would say only in, the winter movie draft, when the pool is a little bit smaller, the dollars are a little bit lower, whether or not we want to think about splitting movies in the future, for which I am totally against, except for Star Wars, because I think Star Wars might be the highest grossing movie of all time.
Well, we'll see.
Anchorman, only $40 million, Brian.
Wait.
Not that it really would have...
Anchorman's out? I didn't know.
Yeah, Anchorman 2 came out. I wish they promoted it. and then, of course, the Christmas movie's coming out. Father Robert Ballesteri with The Wolf of Wall Street. See you in the chat room, Padre. Good luck with The Wolf. I have Grudge Match, which I still have high hopes for. It will push me up. Oh, no, I don't. Casey McKinnon has The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which could do something to help her, actually. And then 47 Ronin for Jeff Cannata. Of course, the final one will be Brian with Paranormal Activity, the marked ones. But yeah, that's not until January 3rd.
That was one that I got awarded as a pity prize because all my movies got moved out.
I mean, 'tis the season to go to horror movies, right?
Ring in the new year with yet another in that franchise of
it's
scary
gonna be
movies.
A horror of a 2014.
Exactly. All right, look, let's just move.
Hey, do we have a premiering this week bumper?
No, that
which we normally don't do when we have the movie draft, but we have a Netflix premiere coming up on tomorrow, Christmas Eve. It's the kids' animated show Turbo Fast, based on Turbo. This is the one we've talked about where they're only putting out 5 episodes because they're putting them out as they get them done.
Yeah, that's right. We had our industry insider who said, no, they're just really hard to make. Lay off. So,
this is traditional 2D animation, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I saw a promo for it, and it looked way more compelling than the 3D movie.
Wow. Well, I'm sure I'm going to get to see it because the kids have taken to exploring all of Netflix on their own. You know, they just go try stuff on and they rewatch stuff that they like. And anyway, who knows? But look, let's move into some feedback. Here's a song. Totally different. Right on. Do we have some feedback?
We do, actually. We've been getting emails to cordkillers@gmail.com, our email address. Philip and Wendy wrote in from Brooklyn. Gentlemen, in your honor, my wife Wendy and I cut the cord with Verizon today.
Congrats.
We canceled our cable TV but kept our Fios internet service, so we still have one cord, but it's the good one. And Verizon said, we're welcome to keep 13 local TV channels for free. I guess we don't get to keep the UHF channels. That's odd. Now we're saving $70 a month. Oops, just found out that we're only saving $65 a month because, dear valued customer, it's actually $5 more per month than they said. Oh, and we also have to pay an additional $10 to return our DVR.
What?
I feel like I just made a deal with some guy on Canal Street. We will continue to feast from our Apple TV, where we watch Netflix and iTunes and podcasts. So we're ready for your next show. Happy holidays to you both. Thanks, Philip. $10 to return a DVR? Have you guys heard of that?
Yeah. I had to pay it for Comcast, I believe, when I turned in a DVR. They have like a restocking fee.
Oh, I guess I turned in a modem when I moved here, not a DVR, but a restocking fee?
Yeah.
For a DVR you're renting from them?
I don't know if you picked up on this, Tom. Cable companies are shameless in their ridiculousness to jab you for every dime and nickel that they possibly can.
Wouldn't have thought.
they actually hire somebody that tickles you on the way out to see if change just falls out of your pockets.
Can you explain to me this other note in here? Because it looks like you chopped out some pieces of an email, and I'm not entirely sure what it is.
Oh, do you mean the next email here?
Yes.
From Jamie?
Yes.
He says, see what you can do when the TV network is not in the USA. And he has a link to the slingbox.com page where you can get Dish World, 180 channels, $15 a month, 8-day replay period without needing a DVR because they record and store everything inside your home, outside your home. Looks great if you were an international sports or soccer fan. So you pay for it. You get it on your Sling Box, and then you can watch it anywhere your Sling Box
is. That sounds an awful lot like you'd be able to watch what you want, when you want, on whatever device you want.
It's the Trojan horse for Dish doing this for domestic, right? They're learning how this business is going to work by doing it with international channels that they can get to agree to do this because they otherwise wouldn't get any carriage in the United States. And then when they're ready to pull the trigger, they're going to have a lot of research under their belts.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Dish is one of those companies that in these shifting times is very much the wild card, double middle finger doing donuts in this, very nervous landscape because they really have very little to lose.
Yeah. Well, we talked about it, man. They're the RC Cola and they could afford to go totally nuts because you're right. They have nothing to lose. That's why they're doing the hopper and they're like, screw you. We'll edit out the commercials and stuff.
Yeah. Come on, get some.
Yeah. No, I think it's great. And I guess that's it for feedback. I can't believe we stumbled through our first beta episode of Cord Killers.
I know. That's amazing. You know what? I got to tell you guys, I am still a DirecTV subscriber. I'm the rear guard action for Cord Killers. Part of the reason for that, I haven't even done the chicken challenge, is I was on a year contract because of the move. And I just didn't want to mess with that. But I did call to cancel Showtime yesterday.
Oh.
Because we got Showtime with it for free for 3 months on a special rebate deal. So I was calling to cancel it, and they're like, well, why are you canceling it? And I'm like, we just don't watch it. I'm like, well, tell you what we'll do. We'll take $5 off your HBO a month and $6.50 off Showtime a month, which will actually not only pay for the Showtime channel, but give you an extra dollar a month.
I'm telling you, man, this is so like, desperate.
So wait a minute. If I agree to this, then Showtime stays on my DirecTV, but my bill goes down $13 a month because I'm losing the Showtime, or maybe it's $11 a month, but I'm losing Showtime's cost plus a dollar. They're like, yes. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, all right. Here's what you guys should do. In honor of Cord Killers, this brand new show, what everybody listening right now should do this week between now and the next time that this show airs, call your cable or satellite company if you still have it and cancel your service. Now, don't actually do it if you don't want to, right? But just call them and tell them that you are canceling, renegotiate your deal, and then just see what happens. I mean, because like you don't have to do it. And as Brian has proven, you can literally go 12 hours on the phone with these people and they will not let you hang up. So just go ahead and just renegotiate your deal. Just go there and get yourself some free money.
Yep, as a matter of fact, we have a support group for you on Google+. Just do a search for Chicken Challenge and report your findings. Chicken Challenge. I'm going to go ahead and call it up here. But the Chicken Challenge, you'll see my face pointing a finger at you. I guess it's now a different. Do we need to make a new group, Tom?
Apparently, you can't change the names in. Well, Google communities.
Apparently, there's a show, Rest in Peace, that had a chicken challenge, and now they've got a support group for all of you guys right there.
As somebody said in the chat room, I think that show was a beta for this.
I see what you did there. Right on, man. I guess we're wrapping up this episode, but we're going to play some credits, and you're going to see a lot of names. Over 600 people went to patreon.com/cordkillers and signed up to donate some money to get us started and off the ground, and we could not be happier or more honored. And we're going to show you all your names. Is there anything else you guys want to say before we wrap up?
Just that, reemphasize what I said at the beginning of the show. We really thank the folks on Patreon who feel like it's worth their while to kick us a buck to do the show. If you can't, we totally understand. That's fine. If you're interested, Brian's got stuff available on the Scam Stuff store. I've got books at my website, tommerrittbooks.com. So you could show your appreciation that way and actually get something physical in your hands, or an ebook in my case. But we do it because we love doing it. So, right. Yes, we need Patreon support, and we need other support to help pay the cost of the show and for our time, honestly. But we are super appreciative that you think this is worth supporting. So thank you so much.
Yeah, and basically, we just opened up another piece of the spectrum, more bandwidth with Patreon. If you want to give us money directly, that's great. If you want to buy stuff from us, that's great. If you want to support our sponsors, as soon as we start sharing them with you, that's great.
If we ever have sponsors.
That's, yeah. But you guys are making something truly special happen, and we can't thank you enough. And Justin, we're going to wrap up here. GoHomeSanta.com, right?
Yeah, absolutely. GoHomeSanta.com. We talked about it earlier in the show. So I would just like to say that it has been my pleasure to offer a substantial guest hosting role to you guys for this, the beta episode.
Aha, uh-huh, indeed. All right, well, we'll wrap it up. Thanks for this episode of Cord Killers, guys.
Bye.
One little side tag on there is that list was the people who donated $5 or more, the highest of the high core. They're high. They're very high, all of us.
Thank
they're
you pie for getting high.
Dog. They're pie high dogs.
Y'all ever heard of Cord Killers?
Hey, what did you notice one was called MPAA?
Yeah, no, I derived a lot of pleasure from that. It was amazing.